important is it to commemorate the First World War in a nutshell?
Very important. But for a whole host of reasons that aren't just about remembering the dead or remembering the sacrifice, the sacrifices made on the battlefront, but also because it's important that we understand what all the different roles were and what a difference it has made to British society today.
How did the outbreak of war affect people in Lancaster, Morecambe and the surrounding areas?
It's really interesting because it was a bank holiday. So everybody was expecting the summer holiday, but there's tension in the air, and there has been for a while. And the initial outbreak, what's really interesting in the Lancaster press is we have this myth that everybody thought it would be over by Christmas. That isn't what's being said in Lancaster in August. They know, the British know what war is like. They've had plenty of experience in the previous years. And there isn't a great expectation that this is going to be an easy war or that it's going to be over very quickly. So there's actually reports in the press about people are not excited, there isn't a frenzy in the streets, everyone's feeling a little bit serious and rather worried. And of course they know, with the relationship between the city and the King's Own Royal, that this is going to have a very powerful impact on the men from within the town and their families.
It's very interesting because all the propaganda obviously was out at the time of your country needs you and, you know, women send your men off to war.
Yeah. There's one specifically for the women of Lancashire. There's a propaganda poster that's aimed at the women of Lancashire telling them that they should let their men go. And I think those propaganda posters are really interesting because they're talking both to the men and the women. With the women, they're afraid that they're going to say, don't leave me, stay with me. And with the men, they're afraid that they're going to use it as an excuse to say, I have to stay at home because my family needs me, which actually, when the tribunals start in 1916, is what they say. So there's a single father with six children who says, I will go to war now that I'm being conscripted, but you need to give me a bit of time to arrange somebody to look after my six children. So the propaganda posters, and there's a lot of them are based on challenging, is he a real man? This is aimed at women. If he's not going off to fight, is he really, can your best boy really be worthy of that title if he won't go and fight the Germans?
And also the music halls and everybody got behind it. There really was a drive that put pressure on men around here across the Northwest to really sign up.
Yes, and they've had a long history of it. So a lot of the men who join up for the First World War saw the men of the Boer War returning and the fuss that was made of them and the huge rally in Dalton Square and the opening of the memorial chapel that's part of the priory. They will have seen these men coming back and being heralded as heroes, and I think that would have a very powerful impact on a small boy who then gets the chance to do it himself 16 years later.
Are there any particular stories locally that you've discovered?
The first story of the first casualty of the war is a young man who shoots himself when he finds out that he's in the Territorial Army, but he finds that he's being called up properly. And the coroner is absolutely vicious and talks about him as having this as an utterly inappropriate thing to do at this moment with the war effort. And his story is told at the new exhibition at the King's Own Regimental Museum.
And that's really my next question. What impact did it have on the home front? That was what was profoundly different about this war than wars previous and perhaps wars ever after. It was total war and it encompassed the whole of the home front as well.
That's right, and there's this idea that there's a huge gulf of experience between the home front and the battlefront, and I don't think that's entirely true. On the one hand, you have veterans who go through experiences they can never speak about again. But it works the other way around, that there are civilians left behind, in particular women, in particular mothers who have to take charge of the family in a way that they've never had to before. They have to deal with the finances of the family. Now, it's not impossible that that happened before, but the amount of pressure that's put on people to cope in the absence of people they love, and where you wake up every day with that little fear in your heart, and you really don't want to see the telegraph boy. You know, you don't want to see the postman, you don't want to hear that knock on the back door, because it could be something wonderful like leave, but it could equally well be something horrible. And actually, I think the worst news you could get at home was that someone you loved was missing. because it's when you don't know their fate. That's not to underestimate what it's like to hear someone's been killed, but there's a clarity in that. Of course, some of that's wrong too, though. You get told people have been killed, and then they write home and say, no, don't worry, I'm a prisoner of war, I'm okay.
What was kind of Lancaster and Morecambe's bit? What did they do in the war efforts from the home front?
Well, the first thing that happens in Morecambe is they lose all their horses. Because the horses are strong, powerful horses that are used to pulling carriages along the seafront, and they're absolutely brilliant for pulling artillery. So they all disappear overnight. So all the tourists suddenly find that these, you know, the horses have disappeared. So that's a slightly more, well, it's not trivial, because I mean, the story, we got very interested in the stories of the horses on the Western Front as well, but it's the way in which the war starts to permeate even the smallest parts of your experience of life at home. In Lancaster, of course, we have that very strong relationship with the King's Own, and the major industries here, Stories and Williamson's, are sending their men, partly trying to protect their men because they know they need them on the home front as well. But they send battalions to the Western Front who all serve together, what comes to be known as Pals Battalions. And then we have all the women and the families who are coping in the absence of people they love. We have a munitions factory that explodes, but a lot of people who visited today, can their grandparents still talk about what that sounded like and how frightening it was.
I also never knew about the munitions factory. So whereabouts was that based?
It's on the White Lund. And apparently, I was told today, one can still see the blast wall, which is a very, very thick brick wall that was supposed to protect the environment should the factory explode, but it was built very quickly. There are questions over how well it was built to ensure that people could get out if there was a problem. Because, of course, we talk about the dangers of the Western Front. A munitions factory is a pretty dangerous place, and if something goes wrong, everything goes wrong very quickly.
How did the war change life, you know, for women and men, gender-wise? You know, did women come out of the domestic sphere locally, or didn't they? You know, there's so many different historical debates about what it really did to change, if anything, the role of women.
I think one of the things people get wrong about the First World War is that they think that women didn't work before the war. They did. They worked very hard before the war. But the type of work they do and how much money they make for what they do does change. And also the amount of independence they have with that money. So the munitions workers, for example, up near Carlisle, have their own football. And it's a female football team. And they're very popular. People, for some reason, really enjoy going to watch these women playing football. And they're also very good at it. There are huge debates, of course, about the relationship between the First World War and women getting the vote. I personally believe that it delayed them getting the vote. But what's really interesting is the impact on the war on a trust for democracy, and the belief that it was safe to give younger men the vote. And because they got the vote, it opened the doors for women then to get the vote alongside them. And of course, this is a very active area, the Northwest, for the suffragettes. And then, of course, there's how do you live with grief? And that's something that really isn't talked about very much at all. But Britain in the 20s and 30s was a country in mourning. There are 3 to 4 million families who are all mourning their dead. And on the one hand, it's such an individual experience. And on the other hand, so many other people are too. So one, you ask me about whether there are stories. There's a man who commits suicide because he can't look the bereaved families in the eye and explain why he came home when his comrades didn't.
As a university, obviously, you're doing a lot for the centenary. What is going to be running through the course of the year, talks-wise, speech-wise, that, you know, people can get involved in?
Well, we're running a programme with the Lancaster Military Heritage Group, and our next grand speaker is going to be Hugh Strawn, who's the advisor to the government on the centenary, who's coming in October and will be speaking at the uni. That's a free event. Everybody is welcome to come. And then we're also hoping to do an evening of poetry and prose on the 11th of the 11th here in town in Lancaster. And again, that's open and free, and everyone's welcome to come, which will offer a collage of experiences, both the stories that we know and some of the stories we don't know quite as well.
The centenary's really gripped everyone. I don't think anyone's been ignoring it because there's been documentaries on telly, on radio, it's been everywhere. Is it encouraging that kind of local people are showing an interest in their veterans, the dead, the ones they've lost, and these really should never be forgotten?
What's been absolutely brilliant about Armed Forces Day and about the centenary in its broader interest that it's provoked is the stories that come forward, is the individuals who have told me about the letters in the attic, and what their grandmother remembers about the explosion on the White Land. And the more that these stories can be gathered and remembered, because we'll lose them, we lose them over time, and families don't always realise what an important repository of the past they are, simply through the stories that have got handed down through the generations.
So you'd welcome anyone to come forward with any photos they've found in the attic or any stories that they do have?
Very much indeed, and we'd also put them in touch with anybody like the King's Own Regiment or Museum, anywhere where there's a really good place for that material to be held. And the lovely thing nowadays, of course, is that you can digitise it relatively easily, so the family can keep the artefact, which is so precious, but also share it with other people who are interested in that history from a whole range of perspectives.